Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q.
Bitcoin isn't just something you hold. It's a new lens for making capital decisions. On May 14th, Unchained and Strive are going live with a powerful discussion on why every business will eventually build a Bitcoin treasury. This follows their report, Repricing the Economy in Bitcoin, and lays out how capital allocation is being rewritten. RSVP at unchained.com/RHR. That's unchained.com/RHR.
This rip was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key, your mobile phone app has a key, and Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. BitKey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC-free for completing the bounties if you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats. Go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
And we're live. The live chat joins the show. Average Gary.
What's up, freaks?
Our Zoomer for the week.
He's 17 years old.
Yep, just going to graduate high school soon and then get an internship at a Bitcoin company. Hopefully learn some dev work.
You've got some recommendations here, some referrals if you need them, sir.
I will use them liberally.
I'm going to be cognizant. I know last week we had an in-person guest in the studio and it was like a one-way conversation. Matt, you're going to open this up. How do you want to open it up?
Well, now I'm caught off guard. I was expecting you guys to just have a back and forth for a little bit. When I joined the live stream lobby, I saw two chairs and I was like, oh, great. I'm not going to have to do anything this week.
Well, we've had a busy week here.
It's been a long week.
It's tiring. Hit the gym this morning with some of the Austin boys. It was a good sweat beat down. Austin's beautiful. Zipped around on scooters, driverless cars.
I taught Gary how to use a scooter here.
He did, yes. He held my hand and I followed Marty through the bobbing and weaving through traffic in Austin.
That was a fun ride.
Yeah, yeah. It was beautiful. Across the river and everything.
Mm-hmm. We had, so for those who are unaware, we had the Texas Energy and Mining Summit here at Bitcoin Park Tuesday and Wednesday, and there was a bit of overlap. Bitcoin Plus Plus Mempool and Mining Edition was not too far, just a scooter ride away. Across yep. the river Wednesday, Thursday, and there's a hackathon today. And so we've been hopping back and forth between the two all week.
Yeah, hackathon, I think they're starting the judging in 30 minutes from now or something like that. And unfortunately, I have to jet before the final competition, so I did not hack-a-thon. I did hack, but not enter into the hackathon.
Do you want to talk about the hack? It seemed pretty interesting, or is it
close
to the chest?
No. It's out there. If you go to GitHub /average-gary/bitcoin-garys-mod, I activated CTV and checksig from stack on testnet 4. At least I think I did. I haven't tested it yet. That's part of what I was hacking on is crafting a CTV transaction and seeing if somebody will fork it out and reorg my blocks when I mine them.
Yeah,
why'd you waste your time with that?
To learn more about Core, to learn more about how transactions are structured, and to ideally create Coinbase mining pool payouts so you're not limited by the size of the Coinbase return. You can just shove everything into a CTV tree if it ever becomes realized.
Do you not think that after the last week and a half, the probability, if there was a poly market for the probability of any of those proposed soft forks happening, has gone like near zero?
I don't think so. I was there for the ossification debate. So it was Jameson Lau and Nifty, and Nifty won the debate pro ossification. And you should go check that out if the recording's out there.
What were her points? I missed. I had to dip before that happened.
I don't know if the points matter. She won. That was it's Oxford debate, so there was a clear winner at the end, and that's it.
Well, they vote, right?
Yeah, there's like you vote before and after, and then whoever swings the most votes the other way is like the winner. So she swung the most votes back to her camp. I don't fall in her camp necessarily.
Yeah, I just recorded with James O'Byrne talking about CTV and checksig from stack. I'm more optimistic. I think particularly at OpNext, there was a lot of Core developers there who basically saw that there is demand for covenants, particularly CTV, which has been out in the wild for 7 years now.
It's been a long time.
Seven years tested. There's a $500,000, 5 Bitcoin bounty on
bugs
that haven't been claimed. And I think I would not be surprised if they get through. I'll just say that.
Yeah, OpNext was where I vibe merged James O'Byrne Reg Test.
No, we're not betting.
No bet on this. No, thank you.
Yeah.
We got 100,000 sat zap. Zaps are working in the live chat. Fat zaps only from Brian. Bitcoin over 100K, zaps over 100,000 sats. Freaks with your newfound purchasing power, have you zapped today? Looks pointedly at Marty. Odell, are your channels working? I'm thinking of sending a 1 million sat zap. If I do, will the shirt become fully unbuttoned? Shout out Logan, shout out me. Channels are working. This shirt has no buttons on it.
I will say Zaps paid for Bitcoin swim trunks that I got for the pool party at BTC++. I bought the Satoshi Papers book here at the park. And then I bought a drink at the park with all of my shitposting money.
But nobody uses Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, Gary. How could you do this?
I was just sad that Parker was busy after I bought the drink, so I could not let him know that my Noster revenue is paying for my sustenance.
Yeah, the hopefully the channels are fat enough, Matt. A million sats.
Soap Miner zapped 21,000 sats. Thank you, Soap Miner. He says, I beat Mav. Appreciate all the ride or dies who continue to support the show week in and week out. It does actually mean a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, freaks. Have you been externally observing what's happening in Austin this week, particularly around Bitcoin +?
So I didn't watch the Nifty Jameson debate, which I guess I should watch now. I mean, I think it just goes to show what a stand-up character Nifty is, because I'm pretty sure she's not actually pro-ossification.
Last time she was on TFTC, she was pretty open to it.
Okay, well, she's awesome. I'm really glad that we have her working on Bitcoin. I'm very grateful to have her on the board of OpenSats. Shout out me for getting her on the board of OpenSats. I did watch 90% of the Chris Mechanic versus Todd and Shinobi. And then my son came in screaming at the monitor saying, papa, papa, because he thought I was on the thing, and I got distracted and walked out. So I caught that part, and I caught some of your live desk stuff, but I need to go back and actually digest the content. Like, I really didn't get that much of it.
Yeah, I was
There was a lot there, and it wasn't cut up. So, like, I had to, even for that one debate, which was, like, probably the thing that people wanted to watch the most, last time I checked, wasn't actually cut out. Like, I had to go and, like, scroll the live stream to get to it.
Yeah, I was chained to the live desk for both days. I caught the panel debate with Peter Todd, Matt Corallo, Shinobi, Mechanic, Luke, first night. And then last night I caught the discussion with Peter Wola, Gloria Zhao, Antoine Passant, and Greg Sanders with Isabel about Core's whole reaction to this.
Yeah.
But I'd love to get your thoughts on...
On the opportune debate?
Well, that and just like the conference in general. Because that's one thing. I know we side talked, like,
yeah,
there's so many great talks that were happening, and like opportune definitely.
All conferences.
Oh, and I did put it on the list, but I'm just going to say it out loud so that you can remind me. You're wearing a BitAx shirt. Like, I like to talk about the BitAx Crypto Cloaks controversy if you have an opinion on that too.
I didn't know there was a controversy.
Neither did I. Okay, we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Sidebar that.
The opportune. I my summary is policy is not consensus is sort of the TLDR, but I think users should have options to tweak their node and tune their node. I think Greg Sanders actually opened a PR that left in the option for people. Like, it opened it up by default, but it left in the option for somebody to define an opportune. But at the end of the day, you know, I work in the mining industry, and miners are rational economic actors. And so anything that's going to pay fat, juicy fees, we'll take it and put it in a block because that's how we feed our families. And I don't know if this opportune debate will further push towards centralization in mining, because you'll incentivize some of these big miners to create more products like Slipstream that just you're allowed to just YOLO non-standard transactions into that they'll mine into a block. But I've also heard compelling arguments on the opposite side of it, that if enough of the network puts in filters for these non-economic transactions, or however you want to filter it out, that will have an actual impact on the network. I don't know. I'm excited to watch and find out, but I personally don't have a dog in this fight. I don't put things into opportune myself. I work in mining, and I know that miners are just going to pick up economically rational transactions no matter where they can get them, whether it's in the mempool or out of band.
Yeah, I would agree there. Yeah, I think we discussed this last week. I think the crux of this particular blow up stems from probably poor PR in the public relations.
Yeah, the sense. Marketing piece in for multiple parties is interesting, to say the least. I also think that the discussion of running alternative implementations, like, I think that's a healthy diversification in the ecosystem. I'm a particular fan of this project. It's like LibBitcoin Kernel. A guy go by the Charlatan is working on it, where it's basically taking out the consensus engine and core and creating like a library that everything else can interface with. I think that would be the North Star, in my opinion, is that project, because then you can, you know, application developers can come tie into these APIs and create whatever mempool they want, or not even use a mempool. So it opens up a lot of like the design space to enable users and application developers to express how they want to see the standardness and the mempool and the policy and everything like that,
because while
maintaining a core consensus that is what the blockchain is.
Yeah, I mean, you want the consensus logic to be the same so you don't have accidental forks.
Right.
But ideally, node operators should have more options, not less. And so that combination could end up in a situation where we have many different well-maintained open source options for people that all use the same consensus logic. And you're already seeing the little piece of that with Knots, because Knots is effectively, it keeps the same consensus logic as Bitcoin Core. It's Bitcoin Core maintained by Luke with patches on top.
Yep.
So you don't have the risk of the fork.
If you're a developer or savvy with Git, you can go in and look at Knots compared to Core, and the validation, or I think it's the interpreter, and like the core pieces of consensus, those files, you should be able to just diff those and look at if they differ at all. And I imagine they won't, but I haven't done this exercise myself.
It's guys, breaking. I think we have the largest Zap of all time. 1 million Zap from Brian. He said, I had a very trolling message, but Matt seems tired, so shout out him instead. Regarding op return, it seems like the rationale behind the change is reasonable, but the communication and execution wasn't the best. My two stats from a non-core dev.
Brian, thank you for the zap, number one. Number two, yeah, I agree with you.
What a fat zap. Thank you, sir. That's wow. Just lifted my week.
You just fed my family. Thank you, Brian.
If you have an opinion on the op return and you... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go. Go, go,
if you have an opinion and you haven't read through all of the explanations from the technical crowd, because there's a bunch of stuff out there for like reasoning, there's threads, there's mailing lists, there's the PR thread, if you can sift through all that. So anybody that has strong opinions, definitely go read why, the rationale, at the very least, because both sides make compelling and rational arguments.
That's what I was saying.
You go, Marty.
I was going to say, after the last few days, I think I'm more confused than I was going in, because you can go read the rationales. Maybe you're an audio learner or a video learner or visual learner. Live Desk, we talked to many people on both sides of the debate throughout the 2 days. And so perspective of Antoine Poisson and Greg Sanders, Antoine walked through like why he made the sort of revamp the discussion around that PR. Mechanic and Luke gave their side of things, Matt Corallo, Rob Hamilton, so many different sort of perspectives on all this. I don't think we talked about it on the live stream, though.
No, we talked about hash pools.
Yeah.
VNPRC on Dispatch on Monday, I think, to talk hash pools.
Yeah. Very excited about this.
Pretty excited.
Let's get this show. Okay.
I mean, before we move to hash pools, if we want to have a conversation on that, I just want like this op return thing. First of all, Bitcoin Core is not a monolithic entity. Like, it's many people. You can't just say like Bitcoin Core devs are captured or Bitcoin Core devs are attacking Bitcoin. Like, there's a lack of intellectual honesty when you say things like that. Now, we have some of the most competent developers working on Bitcoin, and we should be very grateful for that. Some of them have very shitty opinions. That is true. I don't know any that are actually compromised. Maybe some are, but I don't know any that are compromised. Most of them are volunteers. Some of them are receiving grants, and their grants are well below market rate. There's like a massive perception divergence where like people think they're like sitting on golden thrones and like making a shit ton of money. They would all make way more money if they worked in the private sector. Like, they could go just like work for MicroStrategy and like sit in an office and do nothing and make like triple the amount of money that they're making. So I just want to level set that. They're also mostly borderline autistic, so they're not very good at communication. The moderation situation on GitHub was really bad, in my opinion. Like, it was very, very poor, just like closing down debate, ending it. But I would say that there are people on the other side that tweet very heavily and restrict replies to their tweets, which is a very similar technique that was used by the GitHub moderation team or whatever, the maintainers of the GitHub repo. I would like to see a GitHub replacement where anyone can access and anyone can comment without permission. And that doesn't mean there isn't moderation. There can still be curation and moderation without stopping people being able to access and comment. You can just effectively use something like a mute where you don't see the things you don't want to see. I think that would be a massive solution. And then one last piece here. We need more people focused on open source Bitcoin. We're very short-staffed on that front. The problem isn't that there are too many devs. The problem is that there's too few. We need to increase that number. And the existential risk for Bitcoin, in my humble opinion, is that there aren't enough people focused on this stuff. This stuff is mission critical. Like, my family fucking relies on Bitcoin. Like, I need it to work. I need it to always be reliable and robust. And
And so that's where my focus is. And then the last thing I would say is the beauty of open source is that anyone can run code, anyone can modify code, anyone can verify code without trusting. Stop trying to get me to sign your goddamn petition. It's like changed. It's like people are just like trying to get you to sign their change.org petition. You don't have to get everyone to agree with you. This is not a consensus change. Run whatever the fuck you want to run and then live your fucking life.
On the GitHub topic, I think it's as simple as having one core relay that's moderated. You whitelist the mpubs allowed to write to it. Anybody can read from it. So if you're just pleb on the internet, you can go and look at the PR comments from core, reference that node ID and broadcast it to all the other relays out there. But if you're a core contributor and you want to kind of filter out the noise and only have technical discussion, you just read from that one relay. And that's like the simplest version of this GitHub replacement.
I think for anybody who has not watched the conversation last night with the core developers, number one, Gloria put her hand up, said we fucked up on the PR and the communication of what was happening. Like, she put her hand up. She said, we fucked up. It was a big mistake. We need to think about how to do that better in the future. But number two, I think it's important. Like, Peter Woola made the very clear point. Like, this GitHub, while it's open source and you can see them building in the open, it is a workspace at the end of the day. Like,
yeah,
where people are trying to coordinate and have technical discussions and get things done. I think Parker was listening to your comments and he's coming in to say something about it.
You want to sit in my lap or you want me to move?
Say one thing because two things. Matt saying that people are tweeting and then cutting out their replies. One, that's me, or at least one of the
it's
people.
It's not just you.
I can't hear you, Matt, so I'm just going to talk over you.
I love you, Parker.
Yeah. The amount of vitriol and like people who will not question their own wisdom is uncanny. Like, it is crazy to see that.
I've been waiting for this for 2 weeks.
And
get deep into it. Like, what do you mean by this?
I'm not going to go through everything, but everyone keeps saying that this is a PR problem. It's not a PR problem. It's a process problem. And so answer me the question. If it's just a PR problem, why are they changing it and not intending to allow you to configure it in an easy user interface? So somebody can go into the settings and change it. So why do you guys keep saying it's a PR problem?
I'm not talking about
the pull request. I can hear you now. But I'm saying, I'm like, if it was just a communication problem and just a PR problem. Right, because you're not just changing it, you're intending to not have configurability. So and there's a reason. Like, I know what the reason is, but then that reason is in conflict of it being with a PR problem and just communication.
Adding context here, you said earlier that Greg Sanders made a PR to make it configurable, right?
I believe so.
Yes, so I think that.
Yeah, I like that.
What was put out by Instagibbs, and I don't know him, so I'm not speaking ill here, but like what was put out on GitHub by him was that the change as proposed is going to be in the next release. So until somebody comes out and says otherwise.
But then don't run the release.
Right. So then the problem, if you don't run the release, our mempool is going to be more or less similar to mine blocks.
But I mean, my point is, we do have a way of handling this, which is not to run the release and to have different implementations and different maintainers that are handling those implementations. I agree with you that it should be, I think node operators should have as much control as possible. And the most controversial thing is I think the ship has sailed on like every average Joe running a node. Like, I think you have to build things for power users, and there should be power user nodes effectively where you have even more configurability than you currently have. And I would say on the Greg Sanders thing, like, I don't actually, it's good that they keep the configuration setting, but the default probably shouldn't be changed either. The default should stay the same, because filters actually do make it more difficult and more expensive to do this stuff. I mean, if you talk to Carmen, and his op-turnbot is sending directly to Mara, and using Libra Relay, and they end up paying more fees as a result. Like, it's just a fact of the matter.
Yeah, so I'm going to leave you guys back to it, but just stop.
Before you leave, you should unrestrict replies to your tweets, because that's really hypocritical given the current situation of the environment.
It's not hypocritical. I put a post out today that I allowed.
It's a little bit hypocritical.
And it's the same people that are like a DDoS attack. And,
but Gloria could say the same exact reason why they closed conversation on the GitHub repo was the same
Have I brought that up?
I mean, I think that is one of the key problems here.
Well, again, that's where that people are saying that it's a PR problem, but I've already established it's not a PR problem. That's how they're trying to sell this, that this is a PR problem, and there's something different from a process problem and a PR problem. It's not just that they haven't communicated it well enough. And so I'm just telling you guys, just like, stop saying that it's a PR problem.
Okay, it's a process problem, though.
Yeah.
I think that's part, like, when I said, like, PR is part of the process, right? Like, how you communicate this and how it got to this point.
It's part of the process.
Yes.
But in this case, this is not just you didn't explain it well enough.
We got a zap from Royster, 42,000 sats. He says, this zap is for Parker to read. Hi, my name is Parker, and I'm the Peter Schiff of Noster.
Oh, you're getting made fun of. Not for that, but you're
Parker, it's on Noster. Don't worry about it. It's just on Noster. You can ignore it.
You'll never see it.
Yeah.
He wants to come comment on it.
You want to comment? You got the mic here.
Distracted on Noster, and this was habit.
Yeah. This is, like I said, I've been having many conversations with Parker, both sides. Like, I'm more confused than I was in the beginning of the week with all of this.
That's the entropy. That's the chaos. That is the open and free market. You have to sift through the bullshit sometimes and figure it out, and ideally know and have respect and good relationships with people that understand different aspects of this whole thing, so you can form a coherent thing. And at the end of the day, I think I hear MEK running all the time. The safest thing is to do nothing. Just don't upgrade, and just your node will still work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, long term, that's the short term solution, right? And then if you see there's a problem, then you need more. Basically, what you need is more implementations. Like, you need different maintainers of different implementations.
Yeah, but there's no rush, right? Like, there's no rush to upgrade to the next core.
That's what I think. And to Parker's point, the process problem. Like, why is there a rush for this opera term?
Yeah.
Like, I think I agree mostly with that. Like, I can see the argument for increasing the limit or just getting away or doing rid with it. But like, why is there a rush? Like, the mempools aren't full right now.
Well, it's like if you think there's a rush or a not, it's isn't that up to core as the group of people merging the code to figure out what the timeliness of that is? Well,
and this goes back again, why you should go watch the panel from last night. Like, Antoine Poussant, like, made the point, like, Peter Todd made the original PR 2 years ago, and it was like, hey, since this is possible, like, it probably makes sense to get rid of the upper turn limit so they can do it in a way that does not bloat the UTXO set. And Antoine said, like, basically the impetus for the PR that he wrote recently was, oh, Peter, you were right, this is happening. And so, like, it does seem like this outcome was foreseen by Peter Todd a few years ago.
Yeah.
And many core devs were skeptical at the time, like, let's not mess with it, it's not clear yet. And now they're like, it's clear.
And forgive me, have you guys talked about, like, the technical why upper turn is, like, the preferred way of putting arbitrary data into, like, Bitcoin transactions?
I think you're better suited to do this.
Okay. So you can put arbitrary data into anywhere in the Bitcoin transaction, right? One of the ways historically it's been done is you would do a one of two multisig, and one of the pub keys in the multisig was the arbitrary data. All you have to do is make sure it's a valid pub key, right? And I'm not even sure if you have to do that, but that is going to be in your node. Like, you can't say ignore that data because it's part of script. In upper turn data, there's a flag, I believe, you can toggle that says just ignore everything after all the upper turn and don't store it in the node.
It's
don't
like
store
data it in like carrier the, zero or something, like that, right?
Is that I what think
you,
so. Something.
That's what you flag.
I don't know the specific flag, yeah. But
the data in OpReturn can be pruned safely by your node, so you're not storing the JPEGs or whatever else is being shoved in there.
No, that's like, and just building on this more, going deeper down this rabbit hole, even though I'm exhausted of the conversation. Like the subjectivity of what is a monetary use case. Like, it's not.
Ooh, yeah, that's a deep one.
That's a deep one.
Well, there's that too. And then the people, I always like to try to play devil's advocate with things. And if you're concerned about UTXO bloat, what happens when 10% of the global population wants to hit the base chain? We're going to have a lot more UTXOs than we have right now. And I know it's been accelerated a lot because of like the arbitrary data stuff. I think there's some metric out there online of people measuring it, and it's like greatly accelerated in recent years. But you're not bullish on Bitcoin if you don't think there's going to be a huge UTXO set 10 years from now.
Well, that's where you get in the conversation about covenants and vaults and stuff like that.
I love that conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, but that stuff never happens without pressure. Like, you need actual market pressure.
True.
I mean, you can pay like 2 sats per byte and just get confirmed now. So
mine your own blocks. That the solution is mining your own blocks. If you hate the degens shoving arbitrary data in there, they're going to have bigger transactions. You get to collect the fees if you're mining your own blocks. So go buy BitAx, go buy an S19, S21, and figure out how to get hashing.
And you know what pool you use in that situation, which is the beautiful irony of this whole thing, is you're best off using Ocean with Datum and constructing your own blocks and adding the shit.
Absolutely. Yeah, I went to the Datum
talk.
Which
I don't want to discourage that. I think that's awesome that people can construct their own blocks, and I love Ocean. But there is a massive irony. And then you use knots to do it. So you run knots with Datum, and you mine Bitcoin blocks.
It's anything that's template compatible.
Yeah, but with like you have way more controls if you use knots. Like, they have it set up for it.
Yeah.
Like, you could use Core, but it would be more difficult for you. I just want to say, because I know Parker's still listening, I love you, Parker. And I appreciate most people that are very focused on Bitcoin. Like, there's not many of us. I think people don't realize that there are not many of us that are actually like focused on the fundamentals of Bitcoin. The biggest concern I have with this whole thing is it's just a weird hill to die on both sides, whether it's Bitcoin Core or the opposite side. And it's devolved into like witch hunts and extremes where like people are like, oh, it's an emergency, like the world's going to end, like everything's going to fucking fall apart. Like, no, it's not.
Completely.
You can mine these things right now. They're getting mined right now.
A healthy immune system actively pursues perceived threats, right? That's like when people stop caring and they're like, yeah, just merge it.
Yeah, but you do have like, what is it, like overactive. Yeah.
This doesn't feel like a healthy immune system. This feels like an immune deficiency, like an immune compromise disorder or whatever. Yeah, like where it's
cannibalization.
The body's attacking itself. Like it's I don't know. If you wanted to run a coordinated PSYOP to discourage the open source ecosystem and open source contributors joining the ecosystem, this is exactly what you would do. And I'm not saying that's the case, but this is exactly what you would do. And you would go pay Peter Todd, have him do the fucking PR, then pay someone on the other side, start up the shit, and then boom, done.
Everybody has to realize too, is Peter Todd is a massive troll. Like,
he's an economically rational actor. If somebody paid me to write some code and it was worth it and it helped my family, then I would probably write the code, because at the end of the day, we all have bills to pay, and stacking sats is the way to go. Ideally, you can take a more philosophical and like hardline approach and act on principles. But you can't stop economically rational actors from just doing things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to co-sign what you said, Matt. It is great that so many people on both sides of this argument are so passionate about Bitcoin. I think it all comes from a place of good intention. And I think we should stop flinging shit, show some grace, try to have a conversation about how to actually proceed with this. And I think People, I asked many people yesterday, particularly on the live desk, like, do you think there's been any benefit of meeting at the conference? And it was like a little wishy-washy, but I do think there will be some.
Oh, real life is always different. It's the internet comes alive at conferences, and then you realize that these are just people. You go have lunch with them, you sit down with them, you chat with them, shake their hand, you look them in the eye, and it's like we're all human, horribly flawed humans existing in this world together at the end of the day. Luckily, we all share common money. That's great.
Yeah.
But there was no I didn't feel a lot of animosity at the conference. Like, there was nothing. Nobody was, like, throwing drinks in the hallway or anything like that or shouting matches.
There's one piece of feedback I'll give, particularly the debate that I caught on Wednesday night with the panel debate. Like, I do think there should be higher decorum standards. Like, there was a lot of eye-rolling and laughing while people were talking. I would have liked to see some measured respectability on both sides.
Hard to enforce that, though.
But I think due to the important nature of Bitcoin, people should take it very seriously, even if you're having a debate.
It's a serious thing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's a serious thing. It's the fundamental underpinning of our society. And if we fuck it up again, I mean, that's not good. Yeah. I don't want to live in that future.
Have we talked enough about this?
I think so, but we'll probably talk about it next week too.
Yeah, I imagine so. Do you want to move on the list? Or do you want to just riff?
I kept the list kind of short so we can riff. But the next thing I have on the list is an update to Samurai on the Samurai case, which came out this week, and then a further update that came out today. So a little bit of a timeline for you. In October, November 2023, it turns out that the DOJ asked FinCEN if Samurai was a money service business, and FinCEN told them no. Then January 2024, 1031 and Samurai co-wrote a legal brief on why self-custody software and collaborative transactions were well within the regulatory framework, and that we had nothing to hide, and that they were legal under the law. And that was co-signed by 20 plus of the best Bitcoin companies in the world. So that was January. So October, they asked FinCEN. FinCEN told the DOJ, not a money service business. They don't take custody. They're self-custody, open source software. January, Samurai, us, a bunch of other companies were proactive about it. And then April, you know, 3 months later, 4 months later, DOJ prosecuted Samurai anyway. Then they didn't make public that they had asked FinCEN before they went ahead and did it anyway until last week. So Samurai defense reached out and was like, we should get this case dismissed because that's ridiculous. How'd you not tell us this incredibly important piece of information until this point? And the DOJ responded today. And well, SDNY, which is, you know, the New York division of the DOJ, responded today and said, you can go fuck yourself. We're going to still do it anyway. That's what I understand.
The rationalization is there's two charges. One is conspiracy to launder money, and the other is not registering as a money services business. So I think they're probably clinging to that former charge for this case. But I think it seems clear to me. I'm gonna have Zach Shapiro on TFTC on Monday. Hopefully
he's amazing.
That'll be out Tuesday next week. I think I'm gonna rush post that. Haven't let you know about that, Logan, but we're gonna be recording on Monday. It seems like the SDNY is acting outside of the sort of desires of the DOJ in DC, which should be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, I left that part out, right? The DOJ at the federal level said, under the new leadership, said that we will not be doing regulation by prosecution going forward, and that these types of cases are out of scope. And so when did that happen? That happened like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. There's something about like a Brady letter and so, or Brady mandate, I forget, but
I'm not a lawyer. I have no idea, but They're supposed to disclose this shit.
Yeah.
Like this stinks to high heaven. And what it is a symptom of, it's a symptom of the fact that the previous administration effectively went to war with this industry. And they were willing to do any, cut any corners possible and do anything possible to make our lives miserable. And they caused serious knock-on effects. Like, I think it's easy for people to forget a year later, but if you go back, you know, it's May now, but if you go back to April last year, so a little over a year, like, people were fucking scared. Phoenix pulled out of the United States. There was many developers that were like, I don't even want to work on open source projects that are not monetized. You know, people were scared. No one wanted to stand the fuck up. Well, very few people wanted to stand up. And we've made a lot of progress in the last year. It's incredible that we're sitting at this point 13 months later. But there's still a lot of work to be done. We need to keep pushing on this front.
Yeah. Southern District of New York. Not great. Any thoughts on this, Gary?
No, I think it just highlights the importance of being involved locally and pushing for the ideas of, you know, privacy is nothing. It's not a dirty word. It's inherent. It's part of, especially as Bitcoiners, your private key is like the thing you have that is like fundamental to you having your Bitcoin. So I hate seeing their attack on privacy, but I personally work on eHash solutions and other privacy tooling. And so as long as I can, I'll continue to push forward on that front.
Yeah. Make Samurai free again. Wearing the hat today. Because we were all, early, literally Wednesday, we were at Happy Hour Drinks post Energy and Mining Summit. And we were all pretty optimistic that due to what happened earlier in the week with the revelations that they went to FinCEN and asked if they were a money service business, and FinCEN said no, they don't need a license. It seemed pretty obvious the next step would be like, okay, drop the case, but they're doubling down.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still good reason to be optimistic, but we need to be cautiously optimistic, and these things take time. And there's a lot of egos involved, and we just got to keep the pressure on. By the way, Ride or Die Freak Scarcity Fight Club zapped us 21,000 sats. Thank you, sir.
Shout out to you, Scarcity Fight Club.
What about one of these Bitcoiners in the White House getting a preemptive pardon for the Samurai Fellows?
Yeah, well, I still don't know if preemptive pardons are a real thing. if they are, we should get them for all of our friends. But I think if worst case scenario, if there was a situation where Samurai does get charged, or I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, whatever, they like get put in jail, they lose the case. I think we can get them an actual pardon, like not a preemptive pardon. I think that's in play. But hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Hopefully it does not. Hopefully sane minds prevail.
Hopefully.
You mentioned hash pools again, privacy. While we're on this topic, before we go to what's next on the list, why don't you toss it up for people?
Hash pools. We are doing the blinded signature schema that eCash uses. So if you're familiar with eCash, it is the best shitcoin because it brings privacy as a trade-off. It is custodial. It's custodial, but guess what? Your pool right now is custodial too, most likely, unless you're mining with the ocean.
Yeah.
So the trade-off of getting some privacy with essentially as you're submitting mining shares, you get a blinded token back from it as an acknowledgement from the pool that says, hey, we accept your share. We're going to calculate it in the payout. What that does is you have this token now that represents hash rate, and you can trade that around. Cashew is the version of eCash that we're using. It's heavily integrated with Nostr already. There's a prolific ecosystem of Cashew development, and the only change you need in a Cashew wallet is adding an additional currency unit. All the other fundamentals are basically the same. So a few line change in a Cashew wallet, and you can now start receiving eHash as you submit your mining shares up to a hash pool. It's a very alpha product right now. I did a live demo at BTC++ yesterday. It worked. I redeemed a eHash token in a Cashew web wallet. That I'm very slightly modified, and VNPRC that Matt will be talking with next week should be able to lay that out a lot. So tune into the Citadel Dispatch for like a deep dive on that one. It reduces the, I believe it reduces the economical viable,
the economically viable scale of mining. So like bootstrapping a mining pool, you're not doing that with a few petahash. But if your local meetup wants to all point to the hash pool, you're gonna have the hash pool mine upstream to Ocean. You get some like payouts from Ocean, and now you know your local mining pool can float its own bad luck, right? The variance piece, the business modeling, the financial engineering is the critical piece to mining that makes it so difficult to do at a small scale. That's why these big bag holders are the only ones doing FPPS and all this other stuff. Well, if you can make FPPS viable for your local meetup, where it's like, okay, the local OG floats everybody's bad luck variance by just buying up all the e-hash for the people plugging in their miners, that I think will help proliferate hash around the world and enable these smaller pooled mining structures to bootstrap themselves, pay for their bills, grow, expand until they can run their own pool where they don't have to have, you know, some sort of like subsidy or variance. Because the more hash you have, the less bad luck you have. There's always streaks of bad luck, but it's like withstanding those bad luck streaks economically is the difficult part. And by reducing that and making this open marketplace with eHash, anyone around the world could buy my eHash. If I'm pointing my Bitaxe at my local hash pool, anybody on Nostr can be like, yeah, I'll buy that. You know, you have shares that I think will be worth something more than what I'm going to pay for it. So you get this speculator game, you have, you know, asks and bids, and that's a marketplace can develop around it. And you can do that. You can do that locally. You can do that globally. Because eHash is just data, you can shove it in a HTTP header and use it to pay for things. One of the guys was talking about potentially doing a hackathon where they just take a marketplace and just make it all hash rate denominated. So you can just spend your eHash to buy whatever.
I love it. I'm hyped on that.
I am too. Cause I love, we discussed this on Wednesday, but I love, you can like squint and see like the focus on grassroots, like meetup mining is great, but at scale, we talked about this, like this is a big problem that the mining industry has been trying to solve for many years now, which is the idea of hash rate derivatives, hash rate futures. And the problem has been a two-sided market problem where it's really hard to get the market together. You have examples like Bitdude's OTC desk back in the day that would find a miner with a bunch of hash rate and an institution that wanted to buy that. So it was like one-to-one clunky. Luxor has their cash settled futures, which has had some success. But I think a model like this where you can get immediate liquidity for hash shares via these eHash tokens can make that many-to-many two-sided marketplace develop quicker.
Yeah, and if you're mining, so you have a cashew mint that's part of the hash pool, and if you're mining to Ocean over Bolt 12, right, your payouts are coming in over Bolt 12, you actually have inbound liquidity coming into your cashew mint that now all of your miners that have eHash can instantly redeem those out through Lightning and never have to touch eCash itself. Right, so it's the same sort of paradigm you have it now, where you're mining with a pool, they're holding the funds for you, maybe, but even Ocean has a problem of dust payouts, right? You can't mine with a Bitaxe on Ocean and expect to be paid out in the Coinbase. Like it just doesn't necessarily work out, right? Unless you have 100 Bitaxes, maybe. But you could mine with an hash pool that mines up to Ocean, and when they get that Bolt 12 payout, you and your 2,000 Sats can go and exit via Lightning or exit via eCash, or you can accumulate enough to exit with a UTXO. Maybe you could buy the Coinbase output. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's important to realize that this enables people to participate in mining in a private way that would not be able to participate otherwise. Without a custodial trade-off regardless. Like it's not adding a custodial trade-off here. That it already exists.
Right.
Just making it better and more accessible. And interoperable.
Yeah, and it's like even more granular FPPS at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, because you PPLNS, you want the upstream to be PPLNS most likely. VMPRC had a whole like diagram on sort of ideal accounting schemas. Because at the end of the day, I never realized I'd enjoy working on accounting software, but here I am. And so it's all accounting problem, right? It's financial engineering. So right now, the economics work out that FPPS is ideal because operators that have OPEX every month that they have to pay the bills. And if they don't pay the bills, they shut down. They want smooth payouts. Well, if you can shrink that down and your local hash pool can smooth that payout for you, you do a synthetic FPPS where the pool just buys up the eHash shares for a given rate
or you can hold on to them and maybe speculate that it's going to be worth more in the future.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be the pool. You could have like
anyone
outside
anyone
external yeah. speculators that
yeah.
want to take on that luck risk, that variance risk.
Yep. And
they could buy it.
Yep.
It's fascinating stuff. Thank you for working on it. It's very important.
I enjoy it.
And I don't know, Matt, if you have this on the list, but while we're on the subject.
I mean, you have the list.
I don't have it up in front of me. But we while we're on the subject of eCash, the Cashew team or the Cashew open source development project implemented multi-nut payments, which is pretty cool. I think I saw that last weekend. Did you, I don't see it on the list.
He at least, Callie was at least demoing it. I don't know if it's live anywhere yet. But yeah, this is an idea that Callie's discussed at length multiple times, which is pretty dope. So with Lightning, we already have multi-part payments, right?
Multi-path.
Whatever, MPP. And so you can use that with Cashew, and so you can pay for multiple mints. So you can have like, four different mints that are all holding a smaller amount of money, and they can all be combined together in the same payment. And what's nice here in that practice is the big trade-off with Cashew is that it's a custodial relationship and you can get rugged by your mint. But if you're keeping your money in multiple mints and then paying from them seamlessly, then at least, you know, if something happens, you know, one of your four mints or one of your five mints gets compromised, you only lose 20% of your funds or whatever it is.
That reminds me of like the bank hopping with dollars, where it's like FDIC limits or whatever. Yeah. So you have to have multiple banks and bank accounts.
Well, that was happening in 2023 when those bank runs were out. People were just like scattering $250,000 chunks across banks. But like, I think this is important incentive mechanism to like, because before multi-nut payments, like a mint operator could basically run with the assumption, like it's probably, since they can't pay a single invoice from multiple mints, like I can assume that they're putting an amount of money in my mint that is sort of critical to them, or is all or nothing, if you will. Now with this multi-nut payments, like mint operators can't run with that assumption. They have to assume that any individual user could have their funds dispersed across many mints. And so I think there's some really interesting sort of incentive alignment, and it acts as a forcing function for mint operators to act in the best interest of their users at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And ideally it's your local mint, right?
Yeah.
I have to run, fellas, but thank you for having me. I got to go get to the, I promised the wife I'd leave by 3 to drive back.
Hey, you're nice. Right on time. Hey, you right are
military man.
You are a military man.
Got to be on time.
Well, thank you for all the work you're doing, not only with Hashpool, just being part of the live chat week in, week out, but also Bitcoin.
Yeah. Thanks for being a ride or die.
Thanks for having me. My local ride or die showed up because of my boost on the pod. Like, he heard the mispronunciation of Shenandoah by Marty. And he's like, wait, what? And showed up to the next meetup. And just stay tuned, because I think we got some things cooking that I think are going to be exciting.
Let's cook. Keep cooking. Yeah. Enjoy the time with your family. Enjoy your weekend. It's been great spending time with you this week, Gary.
Will do. Thanks, Marty. All right. Thanks, Matt. See you.
Cheers. Appreciate you. So while he's leaving, we're just zap heavy. We're zap heavy in the Nostra live chat today. I got a backlog here. We got 21,000 sats, Southeastern Virginia Bitcoin meetup this Saturday, 5 p.m. and Mile Zero Marine, Portsmouth, Virginia. Stay humble, stack sats. We have another 21,000 sats from Open Mic, Nos Vegas side event, Wednesday, 5/28 at 7 p.m. That's May 28th at 7 p.m. Details at nosvegas.grownostra.org. We have Bitcoin in Space 2, Zap 21,000 sats as well, saying baller. He is an average Gary, but Gary's as a subgroup are above average. Go, my dude. We have Soap Miner with 21,000 sats saying, Kirk mentioned the other day that maybe we could restructure the gift card market with Cashew. Thoughts? And then we have a bunch of other zaps, but we only read the ones over 21,000 sats. So thank you, freaks, for supporting the show.
Thank you, guys. Very humbling. Great way to end the week. It's been a long one. It's been exhilarating. A
lot of zaps.
I was saying this to James O'Byrne earlier. Bitcoin Plus Plus, admittedly, I feel like I've gotten away from the technical side of like deep protocol development of Bitcoin. It was extremely, like, it felt like I was back in New York, like going to BitDevs and running around New York having those types of conversations again. I fell back in love with like Bitcoin protocol development this week, I think.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah. I think the in-person stuff is super important. I think Lisa's been doing great work with BTC++. I think, you know, most of the discussion that's been happened over the last 2 weeks has been incredibly positive. It's just the tendency of social media to do like these like witch hunts and cancel culture and defund the police and sign my change.org petition.
Is there a petition like going around? Tendency.
No, it just feels like everyone wants me to sign their change.org petition. Like, do you not get that feeling?
Yeah, no, it certainly does.
I mean, look, if you act in good faith, like I will always respond. Like I'm a big, you know, I think open discussion is incredibly important. But we don't have to agree on everything. Like that's the beauty of it. Like if every Bitcoiner needed to agree on things, Bitcoin would be fucked. The beauty is that we don't have to. It's money for enemies.
It really is. Speaking of that, next on the topic, a lot of discussion around Strike's launch of their lending product, which we talked about last week.
Did we talk about it last week?
Did we talk about it? I thought we did. We may not have, but we'll talk about it now.
They formally announced it 3 days ago.
Yeah, so we didn't talk about it last week.
It just feels, everything just melds together and feels really long. This is a massive launch. It's something internally that has taken a while to launch at Strike. It's something that's been in heavy demand by users, which is a loan product, which is the ability to take dollar loans on Bitcoin and have those dollars directly in your bank account. Now, this product requires, so like, in practice, what does that mean? In practice, that means you can just open the Strike app, deposit Bitcoin, follow the loan UX, which is incredibly straightforward and relatively simple, and then you have dollars in your bank account. And then you have two choices. You can pay interest monthly or you can pay interest at the end of the term. It has no origination fee and no prepayment penalty. So as rates come down, you should be able to easily and with no penalty take advantage of the lower rates. But it is a trusted product. It's a product that requires trust. Like you're giving someone your Bitcoin. And it is a product that inherently has risk because you're effectively leveraging your Bitcoin. It's just in a less intense way than something like BitMEX. So if you're not conservative and careful about it and the price turns on you, you could end up getting liquidated and losing your Bitcoin. Now, I think, you know, that's very important. And it's very important that people make these risks clear, particularly that Strike makes these risks clear. And I think Strike has done a pretty good job of doing that. Maybe people could do better. There's been comparisons to the failed companies that have had similar products like BlockFi and Celsius. I think this is different for multiple different reasons, but I think skepticism is healthy and reasonable. And the two biggest complaints that people have had is the concerns over rehypothecation and the concerns over the interest rate being high. And I will just say, quite frankly, that first of all, proof of reserve should be launched pretty soon. In a matter of weeks is my guess. And rates should also come down pretty quickly. And as rates come down, the product is designed so you can take advantage of the lower rates. Now, even in that situation, it still requires trust. And at the end of the day, nothing beats self-custody Bitcoin in terms of a trust relationship. You know, you have no counterparty risk when you self-custody Bitcoin. So people should take all these things into account. But I've heard from many people that they're very excited about this. And, you know, if it's not for you, then don't use it. But I think this is pretty massive for a lot of Bitcoiners that hold their entire net worth in Bitcoin and want to be able to do things like buy a house or start a business or something without selling their Bitcoin. And take reasonable calculated risk in order to do it and want to do it with a party that they do trust. We've already seen internally, we've seen loan demand pretty big. And I would just say if you don't think that the number one topic internally in Strike and internally at 1031 is we need to make sure that we don't lose people's money. Where have you been for the last 7 years? Like, that's the thing that keeps us up at night. Like, we need to make sure that people don't lose their money here. And always, of course, there's a non-zero chance, but if Strike were to BlockFi, RHR wouldn't exist anymore. Like, I wouldn't do the pomp thing and like write a book and say like how to live an extraordinary life. Like, I just, you would not see me anymore. I would say sorry. I'd be like, there's nothing we can fucking do after the fact. And I would go live my life doing something else. It's the number one thing we're thinking about.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think to the interest rate too, we've explained this many times throughout the years, particularly Unchained. This is the way their lending desk works. Jack put out a video yesterday or the day before explaining this too. The interest rates, it's not like Strike or Unchained gets to dictate what the interest rate is. They have a cost of capital of people providing them dollars that say, hey, if I give you these dollars, I'm charging you X amount, X percentage for these dollars. And then Strike and Unchained go and say, all right, I'm going to lend it out for Y amount, which is a little spread on top of that. But the money they're getting typically comes in at higher rates because people do not, in traditional finance, don't really understand the risk, the relatively low risk of Bitcoin collateralized loans. They view it as a higher risk, and so they charge a higher rate. And I think these will come out.
Yeah, specifically over-collateralized Bitcoin loans should be the lowest rate there is, 100%. There's just a lot of education that needs to be done on the liquidity partner side, who's providing the dollars. It'll take a little bit of time, but I expect rates to come down. And on the same note, it's like that's what you have in the background. You basically have liquidity providers competing with each other over Strike's business, and using that competition to both get rates down and proof of reserves up ASAP.
Yeah. Fun week of Bitcoin. Fun week. All right. We forgot to read Boost from last week, and sorry, yeah. Rob Hamilton. My apologies go to you because you texted me the day before we recorded and say, make sure you don't forget to read the Boost. And I did. Hand up, I did. I saw Rob this week in person. I have not offered to send the sats back, but now I'm thinking about it. Maybe I should because it was a...
No refunds.
It was a timely...
Was it a timely one?
Yeah, it was time sensitive and we missed it.
Okay, so we should probably send the sats back.
Yeah. So I have to go two back. Rabbit Hole Recap 354. 21 reasons.
Was that the one? I think my channels weren't even working at that point. So,
man, I'm not even seeing his boost in here either.
Ah, it's everyone's scammer. Operation Bitcoin has zapped 21,000 sats. Vegas kickoff hosted by Bitcoin Sports Network May 26th. A percent of proceeds are being donated to Operation Bitcoin to support our mission of providing Bitcoin education to military veterans.
I love that. Consider it. We only have one boost that's readable from Rabbit Hole Recap 354. Chef Foisey, 21,000 sats. This was timely. Oh, wait, no. We got it. Chicago meetup Sunday. Join us at the Chopping Block in Lincoln Square to celebrate Bitcoin Pizza Day. We'll be out on the patio cooking up fresh hot pies. in the pizza oven and on the grill. May 18th, 11:30 a.m., 4747 North Lincoln Ave, 60625 RSVP with me on your favorite Noster client at Foise, F-O-I-S-E. That's right around where I used to live. I used to live right around there.
I'm glad we got to it in time. Sorry we were a week late on reading it. Thank you for your support.
Yeah. And then we'll get to the top boost.
This week's? Yeah.
From May 2nd, Rabbit Hole Recap 355. Bitcoin, 100K in sight while Bitcoiners fight. Our girl Pringle Mac met her in person.
Pringle, that's awesome. I saw the photo.
Giving you an air hug here. It was great to meet you.
She was sitting in the chair next to you.
Yeah, she was. Great to finally meet you in person. It's a long time coming. Top booster of last week's episode. She sent it yesterday. 44,444 sats, fours across the board. Palindrome boost. My quote-unquote op return, a.k.a. bucket list. I got to sit in Marty's studio, TFTC. You lads are crushing it. The signal at Thames was off the chart. Wow. What a privilege to watch these machines in action. Shout out to Rod and all the crew who crushed it.
Love it.
Yeah, we didn't cover Thames as much because the Bitcoin Plus Plus and op return was top of mind.
Yeah, that was the first ever Texas Energy and Mining Summit.
High energy.
By Bitcoin Park.
High energy. High energy. Incredible.
Well, the natural one's always dope, so that's not surprising.
Yeah. A lot of good discussions. Halliburton was here. They invested in 360 Energy. Yeah, they're 360 Energy. They got an investment from Halliburton's like innovation lab, and so they came to discuss why they decided to invest in 360. And this is Halliburton Oil Field Services. It's not like Dick Cheney. Like
it's the same company though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's still Dick Cheney.
Yeah. Stimmy. Hashtag 40 HPW. What does that stand for? Hours per week of podcasting. There we go. 21,000 sats. That was a good rip. I'm bullish on Zoomers and this series. Free Samurai. Free Samurai. Got to keep pushing.
Free Samurai. By the way, I forgot. Marty said he's having Zach Shapiro on. Zach is head of policy at Bitcoin Policy Institute. And he's also the project lead at P2P Rights Foundation, which is handling the Samurai Legal Defense Fund. So if you haven't donated, you think the shit stinks to high heaven and then we need to free them, consider helping support because legal costs are adding up and you can go to p2prights.org. Or is it peer-to-peer rights? No, p2prights.org.
P2P, p2prights.org.
Yeah. Yeah, p2prights.org. Can't believe that domain was available.
Maybe they bought it. On to the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, which is coming from Bangladesh, where a currency shortage is materializing as central bank halts printing of banknotes. A state-induced cash crunch is paralyzing Bangladesh after the interim government led by Muhammad Yunus ordered the central bank to discontinue old banknotes featuring Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, the founding president of Bangladesh. New cash is expected to be printed in phases beginning in May, but Bangladeshis report they are currently stuck with old and unusable currency as the national mint has yet to issue replacement currency and lacks the capacity to print more than three notes at a time. Meanwhile, public ATMs continue to dispense old and worn-out banknotes, with merchants reluctantly accepting them and banks refusing to exchange them. Through all this, the Central Bank of Bangladesh sits on nearly 15,000 crore taka, or $1.28 billion worth of old notes in vaults, but the interim government has refused to release them, deepening public frustration. If you're looking for more stories like this, make sure you sign up for the financialfreedomreport.org newsletter. Comes out every Thursday morning, I believe, or Wednesday, around there. We've seen this time and time again throughout the years. Let's think. India was probably the one, the first one. Nigeria, I think Lebanon did it. Turkey may have done it as well. And now Bangladesh. Depending on these banknotes or trying to mess with the banknotes on the go, doesn't seem like to be a good strategy for these governments and central banks. Always ends up in a clusterfuck.
It's true. Bitcoin fixes this.
It does. Only one software update for the week. Wasabi Wallet version 2.6.0 has been released. It's the first version to sync and operate without a central server.
Yeah, so I mean, plenty of other software got released this week. I was kind of in a rush setting up the list, so this is the only one I highlighted. Because I think it's a really big deal. So when the Samurai guys got arrested last year, a bunch of contributors to Wasabi Wallet put in the hard work over the last year to try and make it as decentralized as possible, or as decentralized might be the wrong word, but not centralized as possible, and remove the centralization elements. And this has been an iterative process. The big one was starting with a coordinator that was run by ZK Snacks, which was the for-profit company that was also maintaining Wasabi Wallet. So now anyone can run a coordinator. The most popular coordinator is run by an individual with zero fee. But this started, this kind of removed like the last, kind of the last remnants of centralized backend stuff that didn't actually ever custody funds, but just trying to make it more resilient, more robust of an open source project. So, I mean, just huge shout out to them. I think they've made, you know, they've done fantastic work. A year is not a long time, particularly in open source development, and just absolutely love to see it.
You really love to see it. Despite the chaos of the last couple of weeks, I'm extremely bullish right now. It's been fun. Are you having fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little stressed. A little stressed.
I think, you know, hopefully I won't have to be a public figure for that much longer in the Bitcoin space. I'm like trying to like fade myself out and just, you know, I never really wanted to be an influencer or a public figure. And
is this my fault? I reached out to you and said, hey, we should start a show together.
This last, yeah, kind of, but also great. So thank you. It's been a good 7 years. But it's just so frustrating, like answering the same question over and over again, because people won't read replies that have previously been made, or dealing with people that just make up bullshit and just have bullshit accusation. Like someone accused OpenSats, said that OpenSats needs to defund Jameson Lopp and Peter Todd. And it's like, Jameson is the founder of Casa. Like, he does not rely on open source grants. He has a VC-backed company. And yes, we also do VC on the 1031 side, but he's not backed by 1031. So you can defund all the grants, and Jameson will be sitting there being very, very well funded. And then Peter Todd has publicly complained twice about OpenSats denying his grants.
Peter.
So it's like you could do a little bit of research. So that part is frustrating, and I care. I really do care. Like, I love Bitcoin. I rely on Bitcoin. I don't need you to agree with me on everything. I try my best. A lot of us are trying our best. And I think, you know, there's real enemies of Bitcoin out there. And if your focus is on our 501c3 charity as being an attack on Bitcoin, where I take no money from it whatsoever, I think your focus is misplaced. And I've heard multiple times this week that I'm biased because I'm trying to pump my OpenSats bags. Like, no, like all that money goes to developers. Like, it doesn't even go to me. I donate my time to OpenSats because I believe that there's a massive benefit to my family if we have a robust open source ecosystem. And that's not just Bitcoin. We fund other things outside that's tangential to Bitcoin. And that we isolated a problem 3+ years ago, which was that funding for open source developers in the Bitcoin space specifically was kind of like an insider club that was very few people were getting funding, and you had to like know the right people, and we wanted to like scale that up and be outsiders about it. But anyway, that's how we got created. But so it's been a little bit tiring of a week, but it's to be expected. It's, you know, it's what we've signed up for.
Well, thank you for doing it. I think it's very important work. And obviously,
it's fine.
I'm in the trenches with you on the 1031 side and the RHR side. And I agree. I think there's been a lot of friendly fire in everything we've discussed today, whether it's the op return stuff, whether it's the strike thing. It's like, come on, people. We're all trying to row the boat in the right direction. Let's not tear each other down to make like virtue signaling internet points, put them on the board.
Yeah. I mean, I think actions speak louder than words, proof of work. Right. And like I said, on the strike side, like you don't have to agree with us or trust us. Like we'll prove you wrong. It's going to be a very solid product, user forward product, and same on the OpenSat side. Meanwhile, Bitcoin's at $103,000.
We haven't even mentioned the price yet. How great was that? We're back over 100K. We didn't even talk about it until the very end.
It's in the title. The title is Bitcoin 100K. but yeah, we also have a red Clark Moody's dashboard. But it feels, this 100K break feels stronger than ever.
It really does.
Yeah, look, I love the passion. I wouldn't want to work in any other industry. There's a reason I focus my life on this shit. I'm definitely not trying to play victim or pity points or whatever. I'm just, you asked me.
No, I asked you.
If I seem tired or frustrated. I don't need anybody's pity. I'm going to be here for a bit longer. This is not the last episode of Rabbit Hole Recap.
No.
I can handle myself.
You won't know when the last episode of Rabbit Hole Recap
is. There's still a lot of work to be done.
There is. Again, I'm not going to lie. Like I was reaching a point recently too, where I was getting like tapped out, like, but for some reason or another, I don't know if it was the conferences or
the price
going over 100K. Like I feel rejuvenated this week, even though in the midst of all this chaos, it's been very, very rejuvenating week for me.
It's nicer arguing during number go up than number go sideways or down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. We got the weekend. It's been a long week. Logan, how many hours of recording do you think we've done this week collectively?
It's what? 13, 14?
Yeah, I think we've been on the mic for like probably 15 hours this week. We did one Monday. This is our third
today.
That's
pretty commendable, dude. And then you recorded podcasts too in addition, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like live stream plus you ran the news desk. People should go back and listen to the news desk if you haven't. There's a lot of good content there. It's like basically like lightning chats. It's like lightning episodes.
No, really, I really recommend it, not only with Gary, VMPRC, Antoine Passant, and Greg Sanders. They came on. I think it's important, particularly for anybody that is mad at Bitcoin Core or whatever, Antoine specifically. I think it's good to get his perspective. It was illuminating to me. Matt Corallo, we didn't really talk about op return, but he's more optimistic about Bitcoin than he ever has been. If you know the history of him on TFTC, he's been the most pessimistic core dev ever. I'm trying to think, Lisa and Jeff came on to talk. We talked to Rob Hamilton. Justin Moon was on for like an hour and a half. We were just talking about implementing AI in products. That was a fascinating conversation.
Logan, you should cut these up and put them on the podcast feed.
We are. We're in the process. We're putting them up on Twitter. I'm having Ed do that.
Are you gonna put it on the podcast feed or just on Twitter?
That's my plan, yeah.
I think you should put it on the podcast feed. I like listening on the podcast feed.
Yeah. Logan, maybe we should just cut out like where we took breaks birthdays. Yeah, he's doing it. He's intending. We'll get it up. All right. Go enjoy your weekend with the family. I'm going to do the same. We'll be back next week, freaks.
Much love. Stay on the stack sets.
Peace and love, freaks.